Cyclone Nation. You are now tuned to the Cyclone Fanatic Podcast, presented by Mr. B Clothing. And now, here's your host, Chris Williams.
Welcome to this week's Mr. B Clothing Podcast here at CycloneFanatic.com. We're back. We did miss last week. It was a little bit hectic. My partner, Brent Bloom, was tied up. He was producing the call-in show, the Cyclone Radio Network call-in show last week. Bloom is here tonight, but he's in the home office, but he is flustered off of an intramural basketball performance, which I take you did not win just based off of the way you walked into my house tonight?
No, I learned today that my game does not translate to intramural basketball when no officials are involved.
You need the officials.
I've got that Chris Paul, Marcus Smart flop game. And
whoa, you're openly admitting this.
I would hate myself as a referee. Just hate myself. I fall down anytime there's contact looking for a foul, and I realize there's no officials. I fall down anyway.
So unlike Jesus Shuttlesworth, you do not got game?
I know I'm good. If there was fouls, I would have been at the line about 20 times a day. But instead, there's no fouls.
Who's calling fouls here?
You call your own.
Oh, that's BS.
Well, and so, but there's no one and one. Nobody fouls out. So the team we played had like five just weightlifters.
Doctors? Future doctors?
Yeah, and they just throw you around. It's just like, okay, fine.
Did anybody get physical with you tonight?
Yeah, I got a little Aaron Harris a couple times trying to go to the basket.
How did you respond? Did you respond like Aaron Harris? Did you puff the chest?
Oh, no. No,
no, nothing like that?
One time I think I said to one guy, you're gonna call that. So that's about as Melvin Edgem as I got.
Well, that was my next. That's funny you referenced Edgem because that's where I was going next. I feel like if Edgem was on your team in that situation, you really would have. He would have had your back. I guess is my point.
If I had Edgem or Tron Smith, I'd be a lot more boisterous. But my teammates were not. Were not willing to protect me. So that's how it goes.
Yeah,
we got beat by 25.
25.
I had like eight points, a couple turnovers, you know.
Rebounds? Did you get down in the paint tonight?
I got four boards today.
Yeah, you just keep your stats in your head? Like a running like live stat board there at DMU? Yeah.
I wish. No, I do it mentally. And then I tell my fiance what kind of work I did that night.
I bet you do. Thanks for tuning in to the Mr. B Clothing Podcast, everybody. Go visit our friend Tim Sitzman down there at 1995 Northwest 86th Street in Clive. They had that big sale at the back room this past week. Of course, Mr. B Clothing, all kinds of, man, they get you hooked up, make you look good. Go get yourself a suit. Tell them that we sent you. Bloom, big week. Clones have Baylor tomorrow. For those listening, we're recording this Monday night, so we reference tomorrow. That would be Tuesday. Iowa State at Baylor, 6 o'clock. We'll get to that here momentarily, of course, and don't want to forget Oklahoma State coming up on Saturday. Bloom, let's do a quick, I don't want to spend too much time on Saturday's loss to Kansas State, because by the time most people are listening to this, that is old news. I did find it interesting, though. I asked Fred Hoiberg at today's press conference about the next two games. Not only are you facing hot teams who are playing very well, but you're playing hot teams that are desperate. They're arguably the number 2 and 3 most talented teams in the Big 12 conference. I don't even think that's arguably. I think that they are stacking up scholarship 1 through 13 from a talent standpoint. Clearly, Kansas is number 1. But now these two teams are desperate. Iowa State has a hell of a chore ahead of it this week to even win one game, let alone two. Now, I'm not saying that I think they're going to go 0-4, not saying anything like that. But you got to bring it this week, man, because these two teams you're going to be playing most certainly will.
No doubt. And as we've seen with this Iowa State team, attention to detail and focus, when it's not there, can be a problem for them. And obviously the two teams they're playing will be bringing it. And you just hope that since it's March now, the light is at the end of the tunnel mm-hmm. for Iowa State as well. And they're a good team. I think team-wise, they're better than both Baylor and Oklahoma State. Now, there's some extracurriculars that you never know what will happen, especially in Waco. I really like Iowa State at home, considering senior night and all the things that go with that. Plus, Oklahoma State's not a good road team, even with Marcus Smart. But, yeah, this is a tough couple games, and it means a lot. Iowa State's got to win them both if they want to get in that 2-3 seed in the Big 12 tournament. It's almost a guarantee. I know stuff could happen, like TCU could win a game or Tech could beat somebody late, but Iowa State, to be safe, has to win both these games to avoid Kansas in the semi.
Well, and a lot of it, basically the big issue would be tonight's game, Kansas State at Oklahoma State. And again, I realize most of you are probably listening to this on Tuesday. Hopefully, from an Iowa State standpoint, Oklahoma State took care of business last night. Yeah. And that takes care of a lot for Iowa State as far as if you go 2-0, getting that 3-seed.
And I think if Oklahoma State wins tonight against K-State, maybe that takes some of the pressure off them going into Saturday, which could be good and bad. They may lay off the gas a little bit as far as intensity up in Ames.
No, they won't.
But probably not, though.
Have you watched
still,
that team lately?
They're playing hard. And it makes you mad. Same with Baylor. I mean, Baylor's won a 5 of 6, and Oklahoma State's won 4 of 5 now. That they can have this effort now when they went through a good portion, each of them, in January and February, where they didn't play hard at all. And I know Marcus Smart had a little bit to do with that 3-game suspension. But Scott Drew and Travis Ford get criticized all the time, and this is why. It's because when those teams play hard and actually want to be there, mm-hmm. they're really good. And everyone says, well, are you not critical of Ford and Drew now? No, I'm even more critical because they could have been this way all along. And here they are at 7-8 in the standings, and they're going to probably both get in the tournament. But they should be up in the conversation, the top four, both of them.
Well, what's interesting about this game on Tuesday night is the fact that people forget Baylor was the 7th-ranked team in America
right.
when Iowa State beat them on January 7th. So it's not like Iowa State first beat Baylor when Baylor was in the middle of that stretch when they just didn't care. They were playing really well at that time. They'd just beaten Kentucky. And Iowa State's the team that actually sent them into that tailspin where they eventually lost 6 of 7. They've since recovered from that. But I don't, I think that's important. Everybody's going to look at Tuesday night's game, right. and say, well, Baylor wasn't as good, or what's changed since you played them last? Not much. They were hitting on all cylinders when they came in Ames on January 7th. Here's a bit of a controversial opinion. I actually feel better about tonight's game than I do Saturday's game. Is that and statistics shouldn't say that, Brent. Statistics don't back that up at all based off of Iowa State's record at Hilton Coliseum over the past 2 years. But, Hoiberg's 5-1 versus Scott Drew as well. He has really had this team's number since he became Iowa State's head coach, even when he didn't have a very good team during that first year. Part of me feels that way. I think that Oklahoma State is all of a sudden the team that everybody thought they were going to be in it. And Iowa State, though they're very good at home, I don't think they're invincible at home either.
No, they're not. I mean, both games are 50 to 60% propositions, I think, for Iowa State. And for someone to say that Iowa State's at home, so it's, 80% chance of winning, I think that's not true.
I would say 60% on Saturday, 50-50 on Tuesday.
I'll go with that. And, in fact, as the line out for the game
against
Baylor?
Maybe not. I would probably, because it's Hilton, I would bump it up to like 65-70 on Saturday, but because of that.
Oklahoma State's good, and Marcus Smart is a human foul-creating machine, and we've seen that Iowa State can get into foul trouble. It happened again against K-State. I just think it's so much easier to win at home. We saw it how many times on Saturday, all these ranked teams going on the road and getting beat by unranked home teams. It's just really hard because, one, you're comfortable at home, and then for whatever reason, and it's just the way everywhere, sometimes the whistles don't go your way.
Mm-hmm.
And then you just get out of sorts. And Iowa State got out of sorts at times against K-State, and they had that big 12-0 run in the first half and then had another one in the second half. And by the way, somebody make a shot for the Cyclones as well would have helped.
Yeah.
But, no, this is a great week. This is fun basketball right now.
Yeah,
because this is why – I know some people are probably nervous about the game Tuesday and Saturday, but this is go time, and this is where it's fun, because from here on out, every game means a whole heck of a lot. And Iowa State is probably a 3-4 seed in the NCAA tournament right now. If they win both of them, I think they can bump up to maybe a 2.
Depending on what you do in KC.
Yeah, but if you lose out, you could drop probably to 6-ish. And so these are important games.
What do you let's look ahead to potentially Kansas City. When I say potentially,
so that's next week, man. That's great.
Yeah, that's my favorite week of the year. I don't know about you. I just absolutely love the Iowa State Big 12 tournament experience.
It honestly, if you haven't been,
yeah,
you're missing out on one of life's greatest weeks.
Apparently,
I'm not
they're
even
selling beer at the arena this
and
year.
Now they're selling beer at the Sprint Center.
Yay or nay?
Beer in the Sprint Center?
Yeah, you a big fan of that?
I can't drink it because I'll be working.
Yeah,
but
you're
going
to come down to work for us. We're excited.
I'm an absolute yay. I don't know where the morality came in with beer at college sporting events.
Biggest,
that always bothered me.
Biggest letdown of my life. Went to the College World Series. It was the first year at the new stadium.
Yeah.
And I found out walking into the stadium that you can't buy beer there.
It's
what a travesty.
Well, Texas is selling it now on an experimental basis.
Texas has more money than God.
So
I could see West Virginia going, we're going to do this. But Texas, I don't blame them, actually.
Not to get into the policy standpoint too much, but I think you can regulate people better if you sell it for $7 a beer in the stadium rather than them binge drinking on the perimeter and going out at halftime. I'm talking from an Iowa State standpoint.
Yeah.
And, you know, these people, so at KC, they would hammer 3 beers before they'd go into the game, which probably isn't as healthy if they do 1 before
you're
and
just going
2
straight
during.
From a health standpoint, right?
Well,
here.
You're
looking out for the fanatics.
I am. I'm looking. People know how it is in KC. It gets wild
Bloom,
before those games.
Quoting Bloom, do not shotgun those beers before entering the Sprint Center.
Especially, I mean, there's that, they got that Irish bar.
Oh, yeah,
right
the
there. Don't,
Dublin something.
Yeah, you don't shotgun the Guinness.
No.
Don't shotgun the Guinness.
I'd never been to that bar. Last year was my first time I went to that one. It's not a bad place. They got the Smittics.
Yeah, it's another Smitt's not one you want to shotgun either.
No, it's like a milkshake.
That's what the Busch Light's for.
Amen. Have you had the new Busch Light Copper Signature
yet?
No. I got a six-pack. You want to try it when we get off the air?
Is it worth my while?
It's all right. I mean, it's...
What makes it copper?
The color.
So this is just Busch Light, but
it's
a different color?
It would be... I mean, it's a Busch Light craft beer.
Busch Light has
like
a craft beer?
Like I said on Twitter... Some folks were asking me about it. My grandfather would roll in his grave if he knew that Busch Light was trying to do craft beer now.
Who's going to fall for that? What are they going to sell it for? Like
it's not
a quarter?
Bad.
Is it going to sell it for a quarter more?
It's not bad, but like if I'm going to do a craft beer, I'm going to do, you know, Sam Adams.
Right.
Or
yeah.
Busch Light is, it's Busch Light. It serves its purpose, but to me, going to the craft beer, it's not bad. I'm not criticizing it, but it's not great either.
Copper beer from Busch Light.
Yeah. Anyways.
I bet they sell it at the Sprint Center.
I hope
probably
so.
Probably not.
Again, we can't drink it, but for your sake, we hope so. So my point to leading into Kansas City, there's a plethora of scenarios which could affect Iowa State. In your opinion, knowing all the realistic teams that the Cyclones could duel with in round one, I'll go with, here in my mind, the realistic teams Iowa State can meet up with.
Okay.
Oklahoma State, potentially,
yep.
In a 3-6 type situation. Kansas State and Texas all seem, in West Virginia, those would be the most realistic ones. I don't think Oklahoma loses this week, so I think that they're going to be in that 3 seed. Iowa State's not going to drop to the 6. I don't think that the Sooners are going to have to worry about Iowa State, unless Iowa State could go 2-0, then that would bump Oklahoma to the 4-5 line. I just don't see Iowa State meeting up with Lon Kruger's squad in the first round down in Kansas City. So the teams I just mentioned, which one, in your opinion, is the best matchup for Iowa State that you would like to see the Cyclones take on the most?
I think number one's West Virginia. I know
they hate
Iowa.
Each other, though. I mean,
I know.
They could really get up for the Clones.
Yeah, there's not an easy game in the bunch. Okay,
no.
I'll put it that way. But West Virginia is kind of sliding now. They have a big game against Kansas, but they're out.
They just
they're
beat
out of
TCU by like
they're out of
25.
Yeah, but they didn't even look great doing that. They got to beat Kansas to be in the conversation. So I just from a matchup standpoint,
they won't beat Kansas.
I don't think they will either. Iowa State, can score on them at will. They really can. They showed it in Ames because they don't have a big guy that can guard Edgem and Yang. I mean, Noreen, Debo, that other guy, just not much depth there in the post. So I think Iowa State can score when they want against those guys. Number two, K-State. K-State is good on defense, but they are not going to score 80 points in a game this year again. They scored 80 on Iowa State on Saturday. It won't happen again. Shane Southwell should not be making 4 3.5 like he did. And you tip your cap. That's great.
Mm-hmm.
But they're not a good offensive team. And I take my chances over Oklahoma, who can score on anybody. And they're playing really well right now. And then Texas, with their size, always leaves you a little bit iffy. But that so and then Oklahoma State, like you said, they're wounded. I don't know. No, thank you.
I'd rather Iowa State playing the 4-5 game against Kansas State or Texas than being the 3-6. Even though you potentially miss Kansas on your way, you know what I mean? I would rather Iowa State have to go through Kansas in round two than play Oklahoma State in round one, because I don't know if you're getting out of round one if you get Oklahoma State.
And what do we always talk about this time of year in tournament play? Guards.
Yep.
And when you have Brown, who never gets talked about, but who's awesome and smart, that's a formidable duo when you get in a tournament setting.
And they're hot.
They're hot, and they can draw fouls. And these tournament games are all won at the free throw line. Just wait.
I almost feel like Iowa State would be better off playing Kansas State.
I
mean, even though they lost on Saturday, that game didn't bother me. I watched that game, and I'm thinking the whole time, Iowa State's not going to win this because that's how it rolls. Playing down in Bromwich, it's just like playing in Hilton for the opposition. But clearly, from the eye test standpoint, Iowa State is a better, more talented team than Kansas State. And I think if they played on a neutral floor 10 times, Iowa State would win, what, 7 of them?
I would say 7. And basketball happens. Like we talked about this year. Like it happened. Like Iowa State goes, what, from the 3-point line Saturday? So Edgem and Kane carried everything. The rest of the group went 5 for 36.
Yeah, Long and Thomas were 0 for 11.
That's not going to happen. So. Well, I hope it doesn't happen. If that happens again, then Iowa State's got no
shot. Iowa State was 7 for 27 from 3-point range. It's actually better than I thought.
Yeah, well, because Edgem and Kane
hit those. Hey, what did you, from the officiating standpoint, I've been pretty vocal about the Edgem technical. What did you think about that?
Easy call to make.
How?
Right in front of the official.
You can't talk trash.
Don't do it that obviously.
Bloom.
Here's the deal.
Now you're stretching.
No, seriously.
And I don't hate refs, but now you're just being ridiculous. That was a horrible call.
When can you call taunting then? If that wasn't taunting, what is taunting? I'm not trying
just
to be
swallow the whistle.
I'm not trying to be a loser here.
Was he taunting him or was he talking trash? What's the difference?
It's the same thing.
You could call taunting every freaking time down the floor then.
But don't do it so obviously. If Melvin wants to taunt, do it under his breath. Don't turn and look at the guy.
It is the
right great, in front of the official.
The great Dan Hawkins once quoted, "It's the Big 12. It ain't intramurals."
He did it. I'm not even making this up. When he first did that, my first reaction, that's a T. Right
so
away.
Stupid.
That's what it is. You can't do that right in front of the
Boom.
Ref.
This is big boy ball.
I understand, but Melvin's smart
not
enough.
A seventh grade girl's game. Seventh grade girl or boy does that. Yeah, give him a tee up and teach a kid a lesson.
You can't turn.
This is the Big 12. At what point does the referee go, hey, it's a heated game? I'm going to let the kids play.
You don't do it.
It's not like, from what I understand, what Travis Hines tweeted, he didn't even cuss at him. He was talking trash.
Because he looked. That's fine.
If he's talking trash.
But if you stare and you look right at a guy and
yell.
The
guy was in his face.
Well, yeah, it didn't look good.
Who cares?
Well, it does matter because it's all about appearances with officials. If it looks bad, they're going to call a tee. You can't.
You can't
be that angry because, why can't he run down the floor and talk to the guy while they're running?
Let me shift it this way. Does Edgem have a target on his back from an official standpoint?
You don't have a target on his back. He talks all the time to him. That one against West Virginia.
That was
a trash play on
Edgem's part.
He ran after the official, and he told him to stop.
So
he kept going.
But do officials put targets on certain guys' back?
No.
Just because Melvin plays this way. I mean, this is not a new thing.
Melvin is talking to them nonstop. They like Melvin, but you can't turn and stare down a guy and yell something.
I'm just sorry, Brett. Especially, when you sit down on the floor, I mean, you do it. I mean, these guys are jawing at each other for 40 minutes. It's just so dumb that you just pick out one time and tee the guy up.
Well, because he turned right in the middle of the floor where everybody in the arena can see him, turned and yelled something at the other player. That's just too obvious to ignore. Sorry.
It was something.
And you don't, you know what?
He yelled something like, gimme that, or, I mean, it was
ridiculous.
Like, if he dropped an F-bomb or something, then, and that was my initial reaction when the tee was thrown. I go, well, he must have said the magic word, because otherwise, that's, I mean, that's just an atrocious call.
But you also have to know, if you're going to trash talk, which officials are around you. He did that right in front of Jerry Pollard.
Was that his thing?
Who's a notorious tee machine. Like, there's stats about these things. He's in the top 10 nationally in tees given.
So he's not a good official then.
No, he said that's just what is that's his MO.
No, but my opinion, a tee happy official means that's like little man syndrome.
Well,
to me, that's like the you know what I'm saying? He's the guy he's like the highway patrolman who will get you for going 2 miles per hour over the speed limit. That's what a tee happy official means to me.
If that's the case, then stop speeding.
Again, I get it if he flipped the guy off or if he swore or anything like that.
So is that your line of?
Well, if you generally there's magic words and if you start murmuring them, you're gonna get. But like if he really didn't do that, I have a hard time understanding.
You want to know a little secret? It's more about the demonstrativeness than the words.
I mean, he wasn't demonstrative. He was in the heat of the moment. I just. Listen, we can agree to disagree.
I'm not.
Well,
agree
I'm not budging either. This is Big 12. I mean, this is ridiculous. What about that Arkansas kid? Why didn't he get teed up for hanging on the rim and doing all that jazz after that dunk?
Did he do it in someone's face?
So, is the definition of taunting then?
When you taunt another player.
But I thought it was. I thought the officials were all about taking the. You know, the moment away from your team and making it about the individual. I mean, where is the line? How do you judge that?
They'll give you some leeway as long as you're not doing
it. So did Edgem get warned before that technical?
I have no idea.
He better have, because if that was like...
A line, though. So if I make a three and I bark something in your face if you're guarding me and I'm in the middle floor right in front of an official... You're getting teed every time. I don't know. It is.
If he MF'd the guy, I get it. But like,
if you...
He said, give me that, or whatever.
If you make a dunk and then pound your chest, but there's nobody around, that's fine.
That's so stupid.
That's fine.
I mean, this is... I can't believe we're even having to have this conversation. It was such a bad call. Melvin was completely wrong against West Virginia. He deserved that tee. But, like... I can't get mad at the guy for Saturday night. I just can't.
I'm not mad at him.
I cannot criticize him for talking trash to another Big 12 grown man basketball player in a highly intense basketball game. Ooh. Did that hurt anybody?
You pull the crip on a grenade. Don't be mad when it explodes.
It's so
because
dumb.
He's just playing with fire. That's what you can be mad about all you want.
Well,
that's the rule.
I just think that it's... It all this comes down to our constant conversation about officiating, where, you know, this Pollard guy, is he a good official in your opinion?
He's solid.
Good, solid official?
Yeah.
I mean, it is hard for a guy like Melvin Edgem to know, because if he calls, what's an average amount of technicals to be thrown in a year by an official?
Average?
Yeah, average.
5.
So Pollard, what, throws 15?
Probably 15.
So how is Edgem... I mean, is he supposed to keep officiating stats
you
in
know.
His head? Well, I can't talk trash in front of that guy. I mean, come on. That's ridiculous.
You go talk to Fred right now. He
well, yeah.
knows the guys he can push. And the player should as well. You don't mess Jerry Pollard. He's got the quick trigger.
Well, you're all puffed up now. You're all
stroking
Jerry Pollard.
I don't like...
Here on the Mr. B Clothing Podcast.
As an official, I don't like giving tees. But if you...
Well, you're a good official then.
If you taunt a guy in the middle of the floor at half court, then
He didn't taunt him. He talked trash to him. There's a difference between a little trash talking and taunting. If he MF'd the guy and flips him the bird, give him a technical.
Here's the problem. He didn't
even swear at him.
Here's the problem, Williams, is you watched the WWE growing up. So you think taunting has to be on that level where you have to, like, Randy Moss and pull down your
Steve
pants.
Austin,
yeah, yeah.
You chug a beer.
That's right.
No, I just I'm still okay.
You know what? 90% of the people probably agree with you.
Well, but I'm right.
I'm not getting
if
off this island.
90% of the people agree with me that I'm right.
I'm not getting off this island. 90% of the people also don't know what a backcourt violation
is. How is Melvin Edgerton, answer this question for me. How is he not the Big 12 player of the year? Well, statistic, leading the league in scoring, second in rebounding. How is he not the player of the year?
He is.
I think he is, too.
Wiggins might steal it from him.
That's ridiculous. Just because of hype? I mean,
yep.
That's
and he's on, well, not just hype.
He's a good player. I mean, I'm not
he's
arguing that.
First, he's the best player on the team that's going to finish first.
I'm gonna pull up stats here. We're going to do a little stat comparison.
Wiggins has been pretty solid.
Well,
he was not good Saturday, by the way, but he's been pretty good. It's a three-man race. Edgem, a four-man race. Edgem, Kane, Wiggins, Embiid.
Staten's kind of out of it now.
Staten's out of it now.
Smart is not a contender.
Smart can't get it.
All right. Wiggins. All right. Melvin Edgem is averaging 18.9 points per game. Andrew Wiggins is averaging 16.3.
Let's give me
rebounding.
Yep.
Edgem is 8.6 per game. That's second behind only Ryan Spangler. Hogue actually is tied with Edgem. They're both averaging 8.6 rebounds per game. Wiggins is, man, he's all the way down at 18th, Bloom, at 5.9 rebounds per game.
All right.
I mean, that would be a crime if it was given to Wiggins.
Not. He's the best player on the best team. I've got no problem with the best player on the best team getting that award.
So, I mean, A.J. McCarron should probably have a Heisman then,
well,
by your standards.
There's obviously differences. But if Iowa State finishes fifth, I don't have a problem.
Who's the best player in the league right now?
Who's the best player in the league?
Who's playing?
Who's the? See, that's the argument
and
you
don't
get
into. Don't
think
about the NBA crap. Well, I don't care about who has the most potential. Who's the best player in the league?
Who's the most valuable player?
I mean, boy, this is the Iowa State debate. I would say I've been steady on this, and I don't just put numbers into it. I'm talking Melvin Edgem, in my opinion, is Iowa State's most valuable player.
And I would argue it's Kane. I might give the award to Kane before Edgem.
Okay.
Might even put Niang in the mix.
I agree from the argument I think you're going to take on Kane is that he brings an element to the team that nobody else has.
Absolutely.
And I completely agree with that. But I just, from following their, for covering the team throughout Edgem's career, I just know when you get back from Morgantown and you just got throttled by 25, who's stepping up in practice the next day? That's Melvin Edgem.
Sure.
He's that guy. And that's something that a box score, and we talked about this with our friend Kirk Holland on Thursday night's radio show, where he brought some brilliant takes, I thought, on, you know, in advanced statistics and whatnot. But there's certain things that advanced statistics and the numbers that I just read off when you're talking about player of the year cannot calculate, and that's what Edgem brings to the table.
But so does Kane.
I don't know about that. I don't know if it's the same thing, and it's not DeAndre's fault. I mean, the reason I say that, again, it's nothing against DeAndre. It's more how much sweat equity Edgem has in this program at this point in time and how much passion he brings because of that.
Slim, I'll give you that.
Okay.
Why wouldn't Joel Embiid be the player of the year then for his defensive presence?
That's a good point. I think Embiid, I would be much better off if you give it to Embiid over Wiggins. That's a fair conversation. He at least belongs in the conversation. I don't believe Andrew Wiggins does.
If I was
Andrew Wiggins has pulled more Houdini acts this year. I just
16.6 rebounds for a freshman's not bad though. That's
I'm not saying it's bad.
He's gonna finish in the top 10 in points.
I would venture to argue if you would stack those statistics up against Big 12 players of the years of the past, it wouldn't. I mean, people would raise their eyebrow and say. And you take the name away from it, just the numbers, that's ridiculous.
Jamal Tinsley won a player of the year. He averaged 13 points.
Well, how many assists?
Like six.
Rebounds?
Four or five.
Hell of a defender?
So that's he was the best player on the best team. See, now that's where I'm going.
I don't believe that's what the award should be about. I mean,
People vote that way.
I don't think you can be.
I don't agree with it.
I don't think you can have six wins and have it. But I mean, Edgem's on a team who's probably going to have 11 or 12 wins in the Big 12. This is not a. And you're talking a matter of. I mean, you say, oh, they finished fifth in the league. Well, it's going to be via a tiebreaker. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it's not like
gotcha.
They're.
And that's worst case.
Difference.
That's let me say, if they finish fifth, it's worst case.
But, I mean, who really cares at this year's league if it's third or fifth? Does it really make a difference?
No, it doesn't. The problem will be splitting votes with all these writers.
Well, the one thing Kane does have.
Split. I mean, Kane will split with Edgem, and so will Embiid and Wiggins. I don't know who's going to win.
You can't justify Wiggins winning the award.
Edgem's still the favorite.
Well, the fact that he's been here for 4 years, though,
that
does help
his
him.
Cause.
Because a lot of people know his name.
And that 48-point game is sticks in people's memories.
He had 30 and 16 on Saturday.
He's great. Just shouldn't have taunted.
He didn't taunt. He was talking trash. All right. Glad that we had that conversation.
You're picking the Big 12 right now.
Yeah.
Well, now I think Niang's probably out of it. But I thought the argument could have been made after the West Virginia game. That Niang belonged on the first team. Probably not now. Because he struggled.
Is there a... Yeah. No, he's probably not now. He's second team.
He's second team for sure.
Yeah.
It's still Staten.
Hogue will be honorable mention, you think?
Ooh.
8.6 rebounds. They're in the league.
Yeah.
He'll be honorable mention
for
that stat alone.
Is there two or three teams? I think there's three teams.
He won't be third team.
He won't be third
team. He shouldn't be third team.
He's honorable mention.
Yeah.
And that's honorable.
Monte, honorable mention?
No. All newcomer team. Or all freshman team.
Yeah.
Defensive player of the year, probably not. Sixth man, nope.
Coach of the year, Rick Barnes. Although they've kind of fizzled. We look pretty smart here. The podcast we did 2 weeks ago, basically predicting the downfall of the Texas Longhorns.
Oh, we were smart all the time.
We try.
No, not really. Coach of the year, I don't know.
Go 2-0 this week, Lon Kruger? Little Lon Kruger action?
Maybe.
Bill Self?
Maybe. Bill's always a...
If they only have three losses...
Got to consider it. I lean Lon. For what he did with what he had coming back, that's pretty... That's what scares me about them, is they're young, too. They lose Clark, and that's about it.
I think... couple dark horses that won't win. Tubby Smith's done a hell of
a
job.
He's done a great job.
But you can't give it to the guy who gets ninth in the league.
No, they've
done a hell of a job down there.
They've lost their mojo.
Let's talk about...
Fred's got a shot, but probably not as good as Lon or Rick.
Although he probably should be in the conversation more than he is. I don't think a lot of people realize exactly how much he lost.
Sure, yeah, it was
conference wise. I mean, we
70% of his scoring.
Yeah, and Huggins. I mean, I think Huggins has done a nice job this year.
He's done a nice job, but they're getting falling off a little bit.
I don't believe Huggins should win it. No. I just think that there have been a lot of nice coaching jobs this year in the Big 12.
It's been a great season, it really has.
So let's say Texas and Oklahoma both went out and finished 12-6 in the league. You're still going Kruger?
Yes.
I think I would go Barnes. And I'm the biggest Lon Kruger fan on this side of the Mississippi. But, I mean, I thought that Barnes was gone. I thought he was coaching for his job this year. And he has turned that into an NCAA tournament theme. You got to win at North Carolina. You're 12-6 in the league. I thought Oklahoma had a shot to be a tournament team.
You did?
Yeah. Well, I picked them ahead of Kansas State in my preseason ballot.
It's impressive. I would not have done that.
Well, dude, I love Lon Kruger. You know that. I have so much respect for the guy. But I think that Texas, to me, has been the bigger surprise.
They are a surprise. Just because they were so terrible last year. But the bodies, if you look at their team, they've got bodies. Capable players. But he's doing it with a freshman point guard, which is impressive.
Mm-hmm.
Jonathan Holmes has bought in. Ridley's been great. And then Javon Felix is making shots. I mean, they've got seven really good players. Whereas Oklahoma, I had no idea what they had coming in. I mean, he's done it with another freshman point guard in Woodard. Buddy Hield's been great. Spangler coming in has been a revelation. both those teams are very similar in the way that they've attacked this year. I just what I impressed me about Kruger is he totally reinvented his offense.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're running at a faster pace now than Iowa State. So we all talk about Iowa State's hoy ball. He has taken that same system and put it on steroids.
What would you call that? Give it a fancy name. Something Kruger. It's got to be
Lanarific. I know. I don't know.
League's going to be good next year, though.
Oh, scary.
I mean, you think about West Virginia. Texas Tech's going to be better. Think about
TCU's
Oklahoma.
TCU's going to be better.
Texas.
TCU's got, like, Iowa State, when Hoiberg was first there, they've got, like, five transfers sitting out.
Foster kid's not going anywhere.
Foster's
Kansas
gonna
State.
Be here for a while.
Iowa State, I think, could be better, potentially.
But they might be picked. They'll be picked in the probably five or six next year.
It's another...
You can't pick against Kansas.
I feel like Oklahoma State drops
They're
off.
They're down to 7 or 8, yeah.
Because Brian Nash ain't carrying that team to a top half. I mean,
but
they lost that one kid who was supposed to be pretty good.
Yeah the Grandstaff kid.
Well, and then the point guard this year, they had to boot off the team. I think he's in trouble.
I mean, you got to put Kansas up there. You got to put Texas up there. You have to put Oklahoma ahead of Iowa State next year.
Oh, absolutely.
So then Iowa State's at four with K-State.
No, let's back the truck up, though. I think Iowa State's going to sign a couple transfers this year.
That'll change the game, yes. But who are they and can they play right away?
I don't know. The DeAndre Kane thing was...
That was a stroke of luck.
Yeah. So expecting that to happen... but point is, though, if there is a good transfer like that... Iowa State will be on that young man's radar based off of recent history.
Yeah, well, let me throw a stat out here. Because everyone says people transfer all the time. Right, but they're not the first-year eligible guys. And so last year there were 350 transfers in college basketball. Just 30 of them were those grad student guys who could play right away.
And but so point is, though, Bloom, based off of Hoiberg's track record, if there are 30 more this year, they're going to get their crack at two or three of them.
Hopefully, but the odds of them being as good as DeAndre Kane are.
That ain't happening. I don't think they need that type of a player going into next year.
I would love to get a spot-up shooter at transfer. Like some Ivy League guy, I don't know.
What KJ Bluford was supposed to be?
Stick him in a corner. I mean, that's what they're missing right now. And I love Naz Long and Matt Thomas.
Thomas is going to be better next year.
But they got to find another option.
I think Thomas will be night and day difference when he's not the rookie.
I hope so. I hope so.
It's all about confidence.
Form's great.
Yeah, he'll be fine.
Big kid.
He'll be fine. He'll be fine.
I'm a big Matt Thomas believer. I just want him to make a couple in a row here.
Well, you've seen him do it. It's not like he's been MIA all season long. We've seen him have stretches. He'll be fine. He's got to find that, let's reference Happy Gilmore. He's got to find that happy place. And once he finds that happy place... Watch out.
I love his mid-range game, too. I mean, a couple moves against West Virginia where he got the guy in the air and then tried the floater.
Better defender than you thought he would
be? He needs to get... I thought he had got over the hump there. Was that midway through when he had that big game against K-State?
Yeah.
And then that monster three against Oklahoma State. But the last couple, he's treading water a bit.
Okay, let's look at tomorrow night, Iowa State at Baylor, Saturday, Oklahoma State at home. A couple weeks ago, you picked Iowa State to finish 3-1 their final four games.
What
do you think now? Are you still there? Are you still confident?
I have one. Can I have 1.5 losses?
No, I mean this. You have the right to change your mind. I feel like they're going to lose one of these two games.
I'm going to say they win them both.
Okay.
Really like the matchup with Baylor.
Well, if they win tomorrow night, they'll win them both. If they lose tomorrow night, I do get a little bit concerned about
a minor
slump.
You said earlier in the podcast that Fred has had Scott Drew's number. I mean, he's
5-1 against him.
He's got every single number against him. Fred has owned Scott Drew.
That's why I feel decent about tomorrow night.
Because Iowa State, you look at Baylor and you go, oh no, Corey Jefferson and Isaiah Austin at 6'11 and 7'1. But every single time they've played with those two, it's been Iowa State who's won that interior battle because they can't guard Edgem and Niang. They just can't.
When Niang's dribbling the ball at the top of the key.
And then nobody on their team can guard DeAndre Kane either. Gary Franklin can't touch him. Brady Heslip can't. Cherry's too small.
No.
They can't guard him. And so if DeAndre Kane has like a He just has to be okay tomorrow.
He doesn't need 39-8.
He doesn't know. Nope. He's the biggest mismatch on Iowa State, him and Niang. I don't see how Baylor has answers for either of those two. Now, that said, if Iowa State guards like they did against K-State, where they kind of regressed and weren't getting out on shooters greatly, if Heslip could light them up, and if they put up 80, I think the magic number is 80. If Baylor gets to 80, I don't like Iowa State's shot.
Iowa State, you based off of trends this year, you'll see a renewed sense of urgency from the Cyclones tomorrow night, even though it's on the road. If that happens, they probably win.
And Baylor's defensively been really good the last couple of games because they're long and they play that zone, but Fred has solved that zone. So I don't know what they can try and do slow them down.
They can't win with Naz and Matt Thomas going 0-11.
And that's the other part. I was just going to say, if they have another offer from those two, that's a part of it, but I don't see that happening two games in a row.
No, they don't need those guys to be lights out. They just – Matt's got to make 2 of 4, 2 of 5. Naz has got to do the same thing if he's going to be playing the minutes that he's played recently.
And those guys have been getting wide open looks.
Yeah.
I mean, Naz had about 5 of them Saturday. It's just like, young fella, I know you can make those.
Yeah.
He wasn't even in his corner. Travis Hines wrote about the corner.
Yeah.
Well, he still couldn't make it in his corner.
It's all Hines' fault.
Thanks, Hines.
All right, I guess we'll save Oklahoma State stuff for the radio show coming up on Thursday.
The line just came out.
What is it? Well, let me guess it. Because I've been thinking about this all day, and I think it's a brutal line. It's a very tough one to guess. I think Baylor's favored. Are they?
Well, are you going to make a prediction? I mean, there's a lot of favor there.
I think Baylor by 2.
1. Baylor okay. by 1.
Yeah.
And that could move, but that's about where I would have guessed. It's a 50-50 game.
Like we said a couple weeks ago, don't bet Baylor. Never bet a Baylor game, people. Ever. Even if it is Iowa State, you feel like you got a pretty good read on it. Don't waste your money.
It's not an intimidating place to play either, the Farrell Center. There's not a real raucous crowd. They've been drawing great. They draw better for their women's team than their men's team. So this isn't like K-State where it's – that was a great crowd for them.
Yeah.
I got to tip my cap to Manhattan. I know I heard from some Iowa State people that they had some bad experiences with some of their fans, but you could listen to that through the TV. They were bringing it.
Let me tell those people something. It's Big 12 basketball.
Jerry Pollard doesn't like that hostile crowd.
No, it's a shame when you go on the road and have a bad experience. But again, Manhattan was impressive to me on television, though. Nice. I mean, that place was nasty. I could see why they went undefeated in the Big 12 this year at that place.
They're about to. They got some nasty guys, too.
Yeah.
Marcus Foster's a machine.
Marcus Foster is a freshman who plays with the intensity that DeAndre Kane brings to the table.
Can you imagine? Because that guy's not an NBA guy as far as leaving early.
Yeah.
Can you imagine that guy in more years?
Oh, except with a better shooter.
With a jump shot.
Yeah. Yeah. No, honestly, Saturday night's game did not change my opinion of this team whatsoever.
No.
I did not expect them to win that. In fact, after they gave up that 16-0 run, I was damn impressed that they only lost by 7.
What's encouraging, again, I've said it all year, Iowa State can go 6 for 35 from everybody except Edgerman Kane and still score 73 points.
Yeah.
And I know Kirk Holland's going to come at me, well, it's because they play at a quick pace. Yes, but they can still find a way to score better than most teams in the country. It's just a matter of getting stops and then making an occasional three that will propel them perhaps to a deeper run.
All right. Well, we're both predicting that occasional. Well, I don't know if I'm predicting it, but I think they got a shot on Tuesday night. It's going to be a fun week. Fun week. Bloom, we're looking forward to your contributions. You're going to come down to Kansas City with me and write columns. I know everybody will enjoy that. Our radio shows, I want to give this a quick plug, at Benchwarmers in Ankeny, Thursday is our last Thursday night show. And then we are on the next 3 Mondays from 6 to 7 from Benchwarmers in Ankeny. So we'll do a Big 12 tournament preview, NCAA tournament preview, hopefully a Sweet 16 preview. And that will be it for radio this year. I want to say a big thanks to Mr. B Clothing, 1995 Northwest 86th Street in Clive, for sponsoring the podcast. Bloom, big game watch tomorrow night at the Keg Stand in West Des Moines, if you'd like to join me. I'm going to be there.
6 o'clock tip?
6 o'clock tip. It'll be right on your way home from work.
I think I might stop by.
Be a good time. Keg Stand, West Des Moines, right across there from Valley West Mall. For Brent Bloom, my name is Chris Williams. Thanks for listening to the Mr. B Clothing Podcast at CycloneFanatic.com.